Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to the Vox Markets vlog today. I'm super, super excited. We've got certainly one of the most high-profile YouTubers in the world at the moment, Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary.
How are
Thank you?
You.
Welcome to Vox Markets.
Thanks for having me, guys.
For those who haven't been on Google for the last 5-10 years, yes. Can you just tell us what you do? And
Sure. I'm an entrepreneur. I think at its simplest form, I'm a Belarusian immigrant to the U.S. as a kid. Lemonade stands, baseball cards, real scrappy kind of kid. Got dragged into my family's liquor store, recognized that wine was emerging, launched one of the first e-commerce wine businesses in America, built my dad's business from a $3 to $60 million business on the back of email, e-commerce, Google AdWords. Started a YouTube show a couple months after YouTube came out. YouTube sells for $2 billion. I now at this point, being 30, 31, recognize, wow, this talent I have of seeing things before they happen, both with wine culture, then with technology. That's a thing. Let me use that. That led me down a rabbit hole of being, I'm an angel investor. In 2007 and 8, I invested in Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr as my first three investments as private companies. That worked out well. I still haven't sold a share of Facebook and will continue not to. And that kind of changed the trajectory of my career. Twitter came out. I jumped on that early, obviously as an investor, but also as a personality. Amassed over 1 million followers when that was unheard of in 2007. That led to a book deal. I've written 5 New York Times best-selling books. And then in 2009, I started a marketing agency, a communications machine, as I call it in my mind, called VaynerMedia. Now VaynerX, because I bought a publishing company called PureWow and going to launch a men's vertical soon. That's now an 800-person company, $200 million in revenue, and a lot of ambition. My big ambition is to be an all-time entrepreneur by both my success and my career, but what has become more evident to people, I think, recently is also by influencing as many people as possible in a positive way so that they get theirs. And that means the person that goes from the job that they're not excited about to making 84,000 sterling a year, being happy talking about their proper football team on Instagram and YouTube, to the young gal right now in Sweden who's going to start a $500 million media company. So I think to be the great entrepreneur of this generation, there's clearly the Bezoses and the Elon Musks and the Zucks. I don't think I'm going to be able to create that kind of wealth. I just want to create obnoxious amount of wealth. But, $1 billion and 1 billion people, I think, puts you above everybody else. And I think that is where my behavior is right now. Like, why am I doing this podcast? Let's talk about that for a second. I think it's very meta, but I think it wraps up in a bow who I am. I have no idea how many people watch it or listen to this. I'm going to guess it's a hell of a lot less than the Wall Street Journal or the BBC or other people that chase me. Mm-hmm. I think in a goal to reach as many people as possible, you have to do multiple things. You have to give back to people who are actually doing things.
Yep.
So that they can leverage your name and get more guests. And that's what I'm doing here.
Yep.
And also, if it's 17 or 1700 or 17,000, you never know which niches and which different places where you may catch somebody. So I'm tirelessly trying to bring value by being historically correct on my points of view on culture and attention and business, and that's who I am.
So you're effectively, if I'm right, you're building your profile, and then you're doing all that work for free, but you're going to use that, you're going to leverage off that then to monetize that audience.
Right. I think brand is the ultimate. Whether it's Nike or Manchester United or the United States of America, I think a lot of people tend to build personal brand and then monetize in cheesy ways like ebooks and masterminds. And I think I have the talent as a business builder to do it a different way. And so I'm far more likely to do a collaboration with K-Swiss and resurrect the brand and do business that way than I am to hey, everybody, now sign up for my $88, you know, pamphlet on the internet. And so, yeah, I think I'm going to mass personal brand, but I'm going to deploy it in a very different branding way, in a business way that's a little bit different.
Okay. I just want to take a step back, because one of the things you said earlier really sort of twigged my mind a bit. You're talking about you working at your parents' wine store.
Yes.
And you suddenly decided, okay, I'm going to start doing these sort of videos and yes. everything else. What was it about that? I mean, because no one else was doing it. So why do that? You know? What is that idea?
I mean, it's who I've always been. It's why I started buying basketball cards in the 80s when nobody was doing that. It was all baseball cards. It's the reason I got interested in New Zealand and Australian and esoteric wines from Spain, when in America it was about Bordeaux and California wines. It was the reason I did a website. I mean, do you know, my YouTube execution was very progressive. Like a long-formed YouTube show, which everybody here can go look on February 21st, 2006, Wine Library TV episode 1, was very smart.
Yeah.
Like and very documented. But I would argue launching an e-commerce business for a single store location that sold liquor and beer in New Jersey in 1996, was far more progressive, because people still thought the internet was fad.
Right.
I have consumer intuition. It's the same reason I'm going to be great at voice. It's the same reason one day I'll be great at something that we don't even know. It's the same reason that I bought cryptocurrency in 2014. I understand consumer behavior. I understand what people, it's the reason I believed in online dating in 2001 when it was weird. It's the same reason that I thought Uber could work, because 15-year-old girls would take Ubers, which means your daughter is taking driving with strange men all day long. Nobody would have done that as a parent 20 years ago. I think if you have the intuition to project what humans are going to do before they know they're going to do it, you win.
So you said this is going to be a thing.
That's right. It's binary.
And what is that thing, though? I mean, that's what I'm trying to...
I'll tell you what that is. You all think you're not going to do it, and I think you are.
Right. That's very good.
I mean, it's, you know, like VR. I'm never going to do a VR. If I see tomorrow a pill that, you know, puts hair back on all our heads.
Oh, God, I could do that.
We'll both do that.
Yeah.
You know, that one's easy. Everybody would say yes. But saying something like a rocket ship to Mars and you never come back, most people are going to default to no. What I tend to do is process in a different way, you know, influencer marketing. I wrote a book called Crush It in 2008. It came out in 2009. This is now a decade ago. And I wrote that people would make money for talking about raspberry jam and sneakers. And I got crucified. And here's the best part. Go to Amazon.com. Go look at my first book called Crush It. And go read all the one-star reviews. I'm full of shit. This will never happen. I suck. I'm a charlatan. I sell snake oil. But here's the best part. It eventually plays out. And now we sit here today where millions of people, get it? I just want everybody to understand, millions of people in just mainland China as KOLs, key opinion leaders, AKA influencers, are making ungodly amounts of money that support their lifestyle. Real businesses are producing video shows and podcasts as a media to drive awareness for their business, for what they transact on. You're not a 14-year-old teenage girl. This is proper business.
Yeah.
And so I think my ability to look at the world and technology, understand consumer behavior, but then most importantly, not be idealistic, altruistic, romantic, but create a practicality layer over it. And my willingness to be judged in the short term, and this is a very important part of who I am, my ability to be judged negatively in the short term has an enormous amount to do with my success. When I hired D-Rock to follow me around with a camera 3 years ago, every day, that, you know, that's a leap. You know, there was bloggers, Casey and many others, but they were doing it themselves. You know, being out in public and having a man follow you with a camera all the time, that takes, you know, that is still being looked at kind of weird. We're 3 years into our process.
Yeah.
But there's a hell of a lot more people doing it more today than when we started. And so that has just been the, you know, I mean, my dad got made fun of for letting his son launch a website.
Really? That sounds crazy now, doesn't it? I mean,
but in 1996, it was a huge waste of money.
Today,
when I started my YouTube show in 2006, my staff thought I lost my mind. So let me get this straight. Instead of selling wine all day, you're gonna spend an hour researching and spend 30 minutes recording and then spend 5 hours replying to people on this thing called Twitter and YouTube about you sitting and recording a show. You have to understand, it's hard for us to remember. Only 12 years ago, nobody knew what YouTube was. A show for the internet seemed ludicrous.
I bet, well, you were just saying just now about you being an angel investor. Do you get pitched that a lot?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I've stopped investing quite a bit. And so I get pitched a little bit less now.
Yeah.
I've repositioned myself a little bit. But there was a heyday there in 2012, 13, 14, where I was definitely part of the TechCrunch and Mashable circuit, where I would be listening with the Kevin Roses and the Chris Sacca and the Kushners and Dave Morins and Travis Kevin, you know, where I was a super angel,
yeah.
Cal Canis and things of that nature. I was getting 500 pitches a day.
Okay. So if I was going to pitch to you right now, what would be the sort of, what would you want to hear and what would be the red flags? If I said this, you go, oh my God, you're going to run for the door. What would those points be? What sort of excites you and what sort of makes you want to vomit?
Everything's a red flag, which is why I'm not investing.
Okay.
The only two things that can penetrate me are, I desperately believe in your thesis that in the next 18 to 24 months, this is a consumer trend, AI and machine learning, voice. I mean, if you're building an app on top of Alexa, I'm interested. After that part, I'm unbelievably curious about the person. If you're building an app on top of Alexa and you were a great student and are coming out of Harvard or Oxford, I probably am not interested because I'm prejudiced into that you're a student and you're just getting involved in the startup culture because it's cool. If you're a lad who's been selling blow pops since sixth grade and got C's and D's your whole life, I'm a little bit more intrigued. I think entrepreneurship is a different game than the way we have it positioned right now. I think it's more boxing than it is proper attire. Like I'm stunned by people's inability to understand what entrepreneurship's about, which is loneliness, the ability to get punched in the mouth. I think we have too many people in the system right now who are tremendous number 2 through 13s who think they're a number 1 or they like what it feels like to be a number 1 in culture right now. And I'm struggling with that. And that's why I'm being very careful in my investing because I think I'm going to lose a lot of money.
I don't consider myself to be an entrepreneur. I've started many businesses, but I consider an entrepreneur to be somebody who's made it and successful. And I don't want to call myself an entrepreneur for a very long time.
So I think that's interesting. And I think the only tweak I would agree with you, but I would have one tweak. I think you're doing it right. I think that there's a big difference between being an entrepreneur and being a successful entrepreneur.
Oh yes, yeah.
You know, like, you're taking it literal the way I take it by saying, look, I'm not a football player. But we could play football. Like, we could all leave right now, go right down there and play. But we're throwing around the word entrepreneur like we don't do that for football or I'm a singer. Yeah. Nobody says I'm a singer. You could sing. You don't say you're a singer because unless you make a lot of money to pay for your lifestyle singing, you're not a singer. But everybody's an entrepreneur. We don't put an aspiring entrepreneur. We don't put an entrepreneur in training. We put, I'm an entrepreneur. Cool. The problem is we've lived through 8 years or so of global economic growth, maybe 10, depending how you want to look at it, which means there's ungodly amounts of money in the system, as you know, which means there's a whole lot of fake entrepreneurs.
That's what puts me off calling me, describe myself as being an entrepreneur.
Listen, I'll be honest with you. Even, you know, my opening line here, you said, who am I? I'm an entrepreneur. And it's funny. It is who I am, because I did it a hell of a lot before it got cool, and I have a funny feeling it's about to get uncool, because I think a lot of people are going to get blown out, and I'll still be an entrepreneur.
So, let's use your imagination for a second. You're 25 years old, Gary.
Yes.
He's got $10,000 in his bank account.
Yes.
What's he doing?
I'm doing retail arbitrage.
Okay. Talk people through that.
I think the biggest opportunity on the internet globally, from mainland China to California to London, is to buy things on the internet or in the real world and resell them on the internet. It's just, here's why I like it. It's guaranteed. Mm-hmm. With 10,000, it's not a lot. It's not nothing. I just want the guarantee. To me, when I think about having 10,000, the goal is to get to 20,000, 17,000. And everybody, you know why so many people lose. 10,000, I'm gonna make a billion. I'm gonna put it into some new cockamamie fucking cryptocurrency thing, and it's gonna be 20,000x, and I'm gonna fucking buy a yacht. It's so impractical. My brain goes into, let me go on Alibaba, let me go search Amazon data to see what's spiking that nobody's looking at, and if I can buy hair clips for 33 cents and sell them for $2 on Amazon and run the arbitrage, that will get me to 19,000 bucks, and then I'll do it again, and that gets me to 38, and then I do it again, and it gets me to 57, do it again, it gets me to 88, do it again, that gets me to 150. Now I got 150. I've also learned a lot about supply and demand, and so then I'll make a different decision. Maybe I start my own brand and sell it on Shopify Plus. But I would absolutely go down retail arbitrage, because there's a huge delta right now between what you can buy and what you can sell, strictly on, are you knowledgeable and do you understand Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, you know, Amazon, Alibaba, you know, Shopify. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And so I highly recommend people become practical. And for anybody, no matter what you do, learning to buy and sell is an unbelievable skill set.
So tell me, I mean, clearly you're a very driven guy.
Yes.
What is it that makes you get out of bed in the morning, though? Is it the story? Is it the money? Is it, you know, your family? I mean, what are those?
I would say it's a blend of guilt and gratitude.
Okay.
If you really ask me the truth. I think I'm so unbelievably grateful for my parents being born with nothing. The talent that I was given DNA-wise, living in the greatest era of a human being. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we're obviously dealing with a lot of macro political and social issues,
yeah.
But I think we struggle to contextualize them. The world is better right now than it's ever been. And it's not even close, by the way. And so, I don't know, I'm very grateful. Mm-hmm. I think gratitude's kissing cousin is guilt. I'm empathetic to the things I was gifted. And it's less about I'm a white male. It's more, I think the fact that my parents were frugal and came from nothing and worked their faces off is a far greater gift to me than I grew up in America or, you know, am a white male.
Well, they've instilled that into you.
Big time.
Yeah.
And like, the one thing I've noticed, you know, we have a sports agency now, my brother and I, Vayner Sports. We're recruiting a lot of kids. A lot of kids that play football are not coming from the greatest economic backgrounds or the easiest livelihoods. But it's amazing. You know, I think people stereotype athletes. And they, you know, but, you know, half the athletes we're working with in this new class, they had such great parents. Like, they just dominated. Bad neighborhoods, crappy situations, cruised to success. Because they had great parents. And I think the greatest gift anybody can have are two core things. Wonderful parents who really love you and aren't using you as a product to make themselves look good, which is a huge flaw of parents. And number two, being born to not a lot. I really think it's a gift. And so, you know, I'm grateful and I feel guilt from those gifts, and so I wake up very easily. I also feel a sense of responsibility. I think I've been gifted with something. I really do. I don't know what else to really tell you. I mean, I know that's weird. Like, I don't love to talk about it, but I feel it. So, you know, I don't know. I want to, if I'm not going to do it, I'm not sure who is. I feel like there's a lot of alpha male in me, but I also think that I believe in very soft skills. Empathy, gratitude, kindness, being gracious. These are not necessarily the guy's thing that we all grew up with. I have a lot of young men paying attention to me and watching them starting to talk about things like self-esteem. It's just very fascinating to me to watch my Instagram and YouTube specific and Snapchat and see 16-year-old thugs, you know, really, like cool, swaggy, like dudes talk about, like, I'm going to be kind. Like, it's cool. Like, I think I'm making an impact, and I think I'm excited to take on that responsibility to reframe what the alpha winning male looks like. And I don't mean being overly politically correct. I want to kill people. Like, meaning, like, in business, I want to destroy your face.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm here to win.
Yeah.
Like, fuck all of you. But in real life, I want to be a good dude. I think people have it twisted, and I'm trying to untwist it.
Okay. So what are you most proud of? I mean, clearly you haven't finished yet, but I mean, you know.
I'm most proud of that I've disproportionately helped more people in the last 5 years around entrepreneurship than I think almost anybody. I genuinely believe that. I put out unbelievable amounts of good content. I engage at a scale that is ridiculous, and I get 50 emails a day or DMs of, my life is better because of you. You've helped me out of depression, out of suicidal thoughts, out of debt,
yeah,
out of my bad relationship with my mom. My stuff is heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm extremely proud. I think I have enormous ambition to be a world citizen.
Yeah.
I'm very proud that I love human beings blindly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud, but I hope you understand this. This is very important for everybody to understand. When I say I'm proud almost more of my parents than I am of myself. I feel like I'm a byproduct of them. So I'm kind of like, it's weird. I get proud about VaynerMedia being a good company. I'm proud about some of the things I'm instilling in my children early on. But it's so early, it's hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think I'm a 42-year product.
Yeah.
And so I have a sense of pride, but it's very difficult for me to not realize it has a lot more to do with them than me.
Well, you're proud of your parents.
I'm unbelievably proud of my parents. I'm emotionally proud of my parents.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's really cool. So what's the ultimate goal?
To be the single greatest human of all time.
And you're halfway there?
I mean, I think I've got a lot of work to do. Look, I think the ultimate goal is to have as many people come to my funeral as possible. I want to leave a real legacy. I really do. Look, you have to understand, this is a very special time in the human race.
Yeah.
It is the early stages of the internet, and it's the early stages of content creation. Like, I am going to be viewed very well in 200 or 300 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just gonna be so much content. And I was gonna be so early in talking about things that ended up happening. Like, I don't know. So I have very, very ridiculous ambitions of my legacy. But it starts with the 10 people in my family that I'm closest to.
Yeah.
How do I leave the biggest legacy and impact on them? And I do that. I've been unbelievably financially and emotionally impactful mm-hmm. on my inner circle. From my parents to my siblings to my family. And I'm equally proud of the financial as I am about the emotional. I'm thrilled that I'm the money maker and the psychiatrist. I am. I'm very proud
of that.
That's
a tough deal role.
I think so. I think so. But I also think what I mean to my family is why I've become so popular. I'm bringing value.
Yeah.
And I can bring, you know, notice my answer. I'm talking about people DMing me and saying, you've helped me break up with my boyfriend because he was suppressing me.
Mm-hmm.
That's heady stuff. That's not like, hey guys, run a Facebook ad to sell a conversion fund, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same token, there's people who are making millions of dollars a year or hundreds of thousands of dollars a year by just copying what I do for themselves. That makes me feel great.
Yeah.
I get emails like, Gary, you know, I almost feel like I'm starting to get guilt. DMs. Hey, Gary, I feel guilty. I didn't buy any of your books. You know, I want you to learn your stuff for free. And now I make $400,000 a year and I feel like I owe you something. And I'm like, I reply, I'm like, you don't owe me shit. Like, do you? You know, to me, what ends up manifesting is you start getting a reputation. You know, people are like, personal brand. This is all just reputation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you call it personal brand, people get cynical and start thinking charlatan. When you call it reputation, it starts feeling like the shit my grandpa did. And that's just where I'm at.
Yeah.
I just want to have a great reputation
mm-hmm.
for the people that I interact with and for the masses.
Yeah. Great. So you're in London.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
What are you here for?
Well, VaynerMedia has a very big office here.
Mm-hmm.
We have we've gone from 0 to 65 people like that.
Yeah.
So I'm here to see clients.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also here because I have a new shoe.
Let's have a look.
Yep. The K-Swiss shoe. So I have So I have a collaboration with K-Swiss, the brand. Yeah. My very big business thesis is resurrecting nostalgic brands. Mm-hmm. K-Swiss was a really fun brand in the 80s. It mattered. It hasn't mattered as much for the last 20 years. I've collaborated with them, created a Gary Vee sneaker. The first one came out in the winter, sold out extremely well. This is only a 600 pair run to commemorate the book that I just launched, Crushing It.
Yeah.
So we're doing a pop-up store in London today for 150 pairs. So there'll probably be 1,000 people in London tonight seeing me. And then making new friends and doing content like I'm doing right now. Business.
So you're a fan of London?
I'm a big fan of London. I mean, I think back to the alpha version of me, I have some real issues with European business tactics. I think they're soft. Like, I love London. I love the people of London. I think European sports fans are better than American fans. So I'm a crazy New York Jets fan, like a crazy one, but I would just be normal, proper football fan here. So I love that. But I'm not a big fan of, like, I don't love doing business in London. I don't like that if somebody sucks in my company, that when it takes me my entire life to fire them. So I don't like that. But I know that's going to happen in America too. You're just a couple hundred years ahead. Prosperity creates vulnerability.
Yeah, very much so.
And so I think that London is an extremely special place that has a couple of interesting business shortcomings. One, self-deprecation, and two, bullshit European laws. But other than that, it's awesome.
Great. Well, Gary, I really, really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much for coming in. Cheers.
Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast.